Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm your host today, Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other business today. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you news, opinions, and commentary on the economic and political events of the day, Thursday, March 14, 2024. And yes, happy National Pi Day. I'll have more on Pi Day during our Levity is Golden segment right after our first break. But right now, let's get right to today's market report. In the precious metal markets, spot gold, profit selling today, down 0.6%, about $13.50, $2,176 right now in the New York spot aftermarket. Silver down about 0.4%, 10 cents at 25.07. Platinum down 1.25%, about $12. At $945, and palladium up about 0.5%, $5.50, just around $1,101 and change. Now, precious metals moving on down with a slightly improved dollar today. Well, actually, it was up a little over 0.5%. At 103.32. Other commodities, domestic West Texas Intermediate crude oil up 1.75%, roughly, right now $81.09 a barrel. Even natural gas took a big jump today, up 5.5%, roughly 1.75 a cubic foot. Treasuries mostly up are the yields, meaning par values are down today. 10-year yield roughly flat, we'll call it, up 0.1, 4.29%. The 2-year yield up 0.7 points at 4.69%. And in the stock markets, well, big turnaround from earlier in the day. Dow Jones closing down, it looks like about 137 points at 38,905 and change. NASDAQ down about a third of a percent, 49 points, 16,128 and change. And the S&P 500 down a little over a quarter percent, roughly 15 points at 5,150 and change. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Let's get to the news. The big news this morning, wholesale prices rising at a faster than expected rate in February. Another reminder that inflation remains a persistent top of the mind issue for the economy and taxpayers. Producer price index, which measures wholesale costs for raw, intermediate, and finished goods, jumped 0.6% on the month, according to the Labor Department today. That was double economists' forecast of 0.3%, and comes after a 0.3% increase in January. Excluding food and energy, the core PPI was up just 0.3%. Now, on a year-over-year basis, headline PPI increased 1.6%, the biggest move since last September. Well, early today, the market certainly focused on the PPI release. Comes 2 days after the CPI, which measures what consumers pay in the marketplace. That showed inflation was slightly higher in February as well. PPI is considered a leading indicator for inflation, as it indicates costs earlier in the supply chain. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that about two-thirds of the rise in headline PPI came from a 1.2% surge in goods prices. It's the biggest increase since last August. As with CPI, the acceleration was traced again to energy prices, which saw almost a 4.5% increase in the final demand measure. Gas prices, in fact, jumped 6.8% last month at the wholesale level. Services costs increased 0.3 of a percent, boosted by a 3.8% surge in traveler accommodation services, hotels and the like. Motor vehicle parts and dealers saw an increase of 1.6%, second only to the 2.2% gain for building material and garden centers. And despite slumping prices, gas stations reported an increase of 0.9%. Of a percent. Electronics and appliance sales rose 1.5. Miscellaneous sales, store sales, 0.6. And restaurant and bars were up 0.4%. Then in line with that, beautiful day in southeastern Pennsylvania here, by the way. Most of the day with my toddler grandsons, just having a blast. But boy, worked up a good thirst. Shoppers picked up their spending a bit in February after a pullback the previous month. Again, reflecting the mixed feelings we Americans have in an economy where prices are up, but jobs are plentiful. Retail sales rose 0.6% last month after falling a revised 1.1% in January, dragged down in part by inclement weather, all this according to the Commerce Department. But the February number was weaker than had been predicted, and January sales numbers were, in fact, revised lower. February's numbers also lifted in part by higher gas prices and higher auto sales. Excluding sales from gas stations and auto dealers, retail sales up just 0.3%. Now, as of today, the national average gas price stands at $3.41 a gallon, according to AAA. That's slightly higher than the $3.39 a week ago. What is it? 15 cents higher than last month when it was $3.26 a gallon. David Silverman, who's at Fitch Ratings, said February retail sales provide further proof that Spending on discretionary goods in 2024 is likely to be soft, following several years of strong growth, and as consumer health is somewhat weighed down by inflation and reduced savings. Business at department stores fell 0.2%, clothing and accessory stores down 0.5%, furniture and home furnishing stores saw a 1.1% decline. Even online sales were down 0.1%, but electronics and appliance stores had a solid 1.5% increase. Restaurants, too, had an increase of 0.4%. Now, they say housing spending is being fueled by a strong job market and rising wages, but spending has become choppy in the face of rising credit costs and higher prices the last few months. While costs for many goods appear to have plateaued, consumer prices picked up last month, showing just how vibrant economic activity and strong consumer spending has made fighting inflation a complicated task for the Fed, who is just tuned in to all the data. Well, it turns out the most recent quarterly financial reports from big boxers like Walmart, Target, and Macy's shows that their customers are looking for deals and in many cases sticking to the necessities when they shop. In fact, Target CEO Brian Cornell last week said people are using credit cards to get through the month. Rent costs across the country are up and gas has been volatile. Chris Riccobono, founder of New York clothing chain UNTUCKit, said that customers are waiting for sales. That's different from the pandemic, and he said this year he wants to cut back on the company's reliance on discounts to drive those sales. I want to start to train our customers to get back into the pre-COVID days, he said. That's when the company had sales just 3 times a year. And yes, it's Jobless Claims Thursday, where we saw the number of Americans applying for jobless benefits last week inch up, but largely stay at historically low levels as the labor market continues to party on despite elevated interest costs. The Labor Department reported today that initial filings for unemployment insurance for the week ending March 9th ticked down by 1,000 to 209,000 from the previous week. The four-week average of claims, which evens out some of the weekly volatility, came in at 208,000, a modest decrease of 500 from the previous week. In total, 1.181 million Americans were collecting jobless benefits during the week that ended March 2nd. That's an increase of 17,000 from the previous week. And last week's number, which had been the most since November, was revised down. It says by 112,000. Weekly unemployment claims are considered a proxy for the number of layoffs in a given week. They've remained at historically low levels since the pandemic purge of millions of jobs in the spring of 2020. Well, as I mentioned in today's market report, crude oil futures rose again today, adding to the previous session's big gains as the International Energy Agency now forecasts a supply deficit for 2024. By mid-morning, the West Texas Intermediate contract for April had risen 86 cents or over 1% over $80 a barrel. The Brent contract, international Brent for May added 68 cents. To close to 85 a barrel. Price move came after the IEA forecast a slight supply deficit for the year rather than a surplus, as the organization assumes OPEC Plus will keep its production cuts in place through 2024. And again, it's despite all-time record high production rates in the U.S. and record net exports. The cartel's OPEC's cuts of 2.2 million barrels per day are officially in place through at least the second quarter this year. The IEA revised global demand growth upwards by 110,000 barrels to 1.3 million barrels per day. Oil prices rose more than 2% yesterday after Ukrainian drone attacks this week on Russian oil refineries. U.S. crude price, in fact, have gained over 12% now this year, while the global benchmark has gained over 10%. Ah, pardon me. Well, Melody's friend, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, said it's unlikely that market interest rates will return to levels that prevailed before the pandemic triggered a wave of inflation and higher yields. Asked why White House projections that were released Monday showed markedly higher expectations for interest rates in the coming years compared with projections just a year ago, Yellen said the new numbers were in line with private sector forecasts. She observed, "I think it reflects current market realities and the forecasts that we're seeing in the private sector, and it seems unlikely that yields are going to go back to being as low as they were before the pandemic." Well, again, the yield on 10-year Treasury notes averaged 2.39% in the decade through 2019, certainly low by historical standards. It spiked above, 5% last October after the Fed raised rates aggressively and now sits right around 4.2%. Considerable debate has emerged among economists over whether in the long run rates would return to pre-pandemic levels or settle at these higher rates. Treasury chief said it's important that the assumptions that we built into the budget are reasonable and consistent with thinking of the broad range of forecasters. Well, let me just say, I'm not going to say that's true or correct. I'm just going to say I agree that that's a good and admirable goal. It's just that in actuality, we see a lot of times that the proposals of virtually all presidents, the budget proposals for the coming year, show economic assumptions in a broad sense being optimistic in terms of projecting lower spending, increased revenues, and lower budget deficits. Yellen has hinted in recent weeks that her own views on the issue had shifted. Last January, that's 2023, she indicated it was more likely that low rates would return. But this January, she said the jury's still out. Well, these new White House projections are part of President Biden's $7.3 trillion fiscal year 2025 budget proposal. They assume now that the average rates on 3-month and 10-year treasuries will be a lot higher over the next couple of years than they did a year ago. The 3-month rate, for example, will average 5.1% this year, it says, up from the 3.8% projected last March. The 10-year yield projections rose from 3.6 to 4.4. Now, the latter projection might have even been higher, but for the intervention of Lyle Brainard, who's now director of National Economic Council, former vice chair of the Fed. As we know, higher rates on the growing burden of the national debt add significantly to the overall budget and debt figures. Under the current assumptions, for example, the White House expects the federal government to spend about close to $900 billion, $890 billion to be exact, or 3.1% of GDP on net interest expenses on our debt this fiscal year. Yellen spoke as she traveled to Kentucky to tout the Biden administration's economic policy record. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is an election year. And last today, if we don't get to finish this before the break, we'll try and get it in at the top of the next segment. Axios's Felix Salmon asks, when is BTC not Bitcoin? His answer? Well, when it's a ticker symbol. The world of Bitcoin's ETFs is both highly commoditized and fiercely competitive right now, One way to stand out from the crowd is to boast the coveted BTC ticker symbol. And it turns out that that's what Grayscale has managed to do. And you know what? We'll stop there. I hear the music. We'll finish this story when we get back. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody, taking the day off to do some important work around the office. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver needs. Or check out our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog. They're all free, interesting, insightful, and occasionally entertaining. And don't forget to ask Melody or Carla about our current coin specials. Today, we're offering 50 face value, 90% call silver coins, approximately 35 ounces. A great deal at $885, including shipping, based on that spot price of $25. Call while supplies last. Again, 800-375-4188. Right before the break, we were talking about Bitcoin and how Grayscale has laid the groundwork for this week's announcement of its new Bitcoin ETF, actually more than 3 years ago when it bought an equity stake in ClearShares, which is an ETF provider. As part of that deal, ClearShares snapped up the BTC ticker and attached it to a small ETF that no one cared about at the time, the Python Intermediate Fixed Income Fund. In 2021, Grayscale had already long been jonesing for a Bitcoin ETF and knew that once things were allowed, controlling the BTC ticker would give it an advantage over the competition. Well, it's not yet clear whether the BTC ticker was on the short list of reserve tickers that are held back by the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ to attract new listings. Even if it was, though, ETF companies like ClearShares are some of the exchange's best customers, putting them in a stronger position when it comes to nabbing coveted tickers like BTC. Case in point, ETF provider VanEck ended up with the Buzz ticker, B-U-Z-Z, for its social sentiment fund, meaning that BuzzFeed was forced to make do with BZFD. Humble opinion, not a bad consolation. If and when U.S. Steel gets acquired, the X ticker will revert to the NYSE, which will have the option of adding it to its reserved list. By adding X, however, it would have to release some other ticker currently on the list. If Elon Musk ever decided to take his social network X public, or even his space exploration company SpaceX, he'd almost certainly want the X ticker and thereby be forced to list with the New York Stock Exchange. That event, though, may be years away. Who knows if at all. Most of the time, the exchanges reserve tickers only for IPOs they expect in the next year or two, which means it's possible X could end up becoming available to the first company that asks for it. Bottom line, Grayscale effectively bought control of the BTC ticker 3 years ago. Now it gets to use it. Well, it's time for our weekly Levity is Golden segment. Today's topic is National Pie Day, as promised. As I mentioned at the top of today's program, today, March 14th, recognizes the mathematical constant pi, P-I. The day is celebrated by math enthusiasts and bakers alike. Now, the three and most recognized digits of pi, 3.14. If you're a purist, though, you know you can take pi out literally to an infinite place. 3.14159265359793283464633333 ad infinitum. Is defined as the ratio between the circumference of a circle and its diameter. And while the idea of pi has been known for, 4,000 years or more, accurately calculating it has been something of a slightly more recent development. By 2000 BC, the Egyptians and Babylonians accurately used the constant to literally build their cities. Mathematicians like Archimedes, Fibonacci, Francois Viète, Adrian van Roomen, and Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz all calculated pi by various methods. In 1706, however, wealth mathematician William Jones introduced the Greek letter to represent the ratio of a circle's circumference. A sigma, sort of like a part of Stonehenge, I always relate it to. The relatively recent innovation of calculus soon led to the calculation of hundreds of digits of pi, enough for practically all scientific computations. Nevertheless, in the 20th and 21st centuries, mathematicians and computer scientists have pursued new approaches that, when combined with increasing computational power, extended the decimal of pi to literally trillions of digits. These computations are motivated by the development of efficient algorithms to calculate various numeric series, as well as the human quest to break records. The extensive computations involved have also been used to test supercomputers, as well as stress testing computer software. So how are people celebrating today? Well, funny you should ask. Some celebrate Pi Day with a slice of pie that's cut using the mathematical constant of pi. Some host a pie-eating contest. Academic types discuss the significance of the numbers, and the fractions, 22.7, I think. Movie lovers watch The Life of Pi. and others still look for 3.14 in unexpected places, like food prices, street numbers, or, yes, even car license plate. Me, I celebrated the day by baking a good old apple pie. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. No, you probably can't write off the price of your cat or the full price of your car as a business expense on your taxes. Those are some of the tax strategies offered up on social media site TikTok to business owners this year. And as the tax season kicks into high gear, really, tomorrow will be 1 month till tax day. It's a reminder they shouldn't be taking these claims at face value. There are growing fears over TikTok's influence in the U.S., evidenced by a bill that passed the U.S. House yesterday that would effectively ban the platform if its China-based owner ByteDance doesn't sell it. One of the big concerns is that the Chinese government is using the social media app to push propaganda here in the States. Well, as these tax advice videos and plenty of other things for that matter show, it's often Americans who put up the misleading and potentially harmful content on social media sites. Tax attorney Adam Brewer says a few clients of his are buying expensive cars, anticipating that they can write down the price of the entire vehicle, just as a TikTok post from last year asserts. But whether or not you can claim the full purchase price of a car depends on what you're using that vehicle for, how often for work purposes as opposed to personal use, vacations, regular chores, etc. Well, another client of Brewer wondered if he could write off his puppy because he provided home security. Well, sometimes you can write off expenses for an animal or a pet, but filers have to meet a standard, a rigid standard, that these expenses were ordinary and necessary. That's according to Eric Smith of the IRS. A cattle rancher, for example, who uses dogs for security could likely write off the animal's expenses. But a freelance writer probably couldn't write off their cat for keeping her home office free of mice. Problem doesn't end if TikTok ultimately gets banned. Brewer says he also sees these videos a lot on Instagram. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, just be careful out there. There are a lot of scams and a lot of bogus claims. If you're unsure, talk to a tax accountant. Go to a local H&R Block office. There's usually one person at least at one of those offices that knows his or her stuff and can set you straight. Well, speaking of TikTok, here's an eye opener. Former Trump Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says he's building an investor group to acquire TikTok. The move comes as the bipartisan piece of legislation winding its way through Congress threatens its continued existence here in the States. The House passed a bipartisan bill yesterday that, if passed by the Senate and signed into law, would force China's ByteDance to either divest its flagship global app or face an effective ban on TikTok in the U.S. of A. Mnuchin, who now heads Liberty Strategic Capital, says, "I think the legislation should pass, and I think it should be sold. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy it." Well, apparently there's common ground between Liberty and ByteDance. Masa Sun's SoftBank Vision Fund invested in ByteDance in 2018. He's also a limited partner in Mnuchin's Liberty Strategic. Well, meantime, the passed House bill is on its way to the Senate, where its future is uncertain right now, though the president has said he will sign the legislation if it reaches his desk. Mnuchin said this company should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China. He's no doubt correct there. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have highlighted TikTok's reach in the U.S. By its own estimates, 170 million Americans use the app. as providing the Chinese government with ready access and influence over the U.S. Major tech investors have publicly or privately decried the social media platform as what it calls a pernicious influence. But it remains unclear if the Chinese government would actually permit ByteDance to sell TikTok to a U.S. buyer. TikTok, in fact, has lobbied furiously against the bill already, including a concerted pitch to its user base and through videos on its platforms. That's resulted in a number of House members and senators saying they've received hundreds, even 1,000 phone calls, many of them from younger children, saying, don't sell it, don't ban it in any event. TikTok CEO Zhou Zhichu has implied that a sale isn't an option. China Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin described the bipartisan push as indicative of robber's logic toward TikTok. Well, ByteDance was valued at $220 billion at its last funding round last year. While the valuation for TikTok, current one, wasn't immediately clear, any sale price for the U.S. division would likely be less. TikTok's most valuable asset, and to lawmakers, its most worrying weapon, is its algorithm, which delivers tailored content to users and was developed in China. Any sale of TikTok without the algorithm would be significantly less attractive to potential buyers. Now, Mnuchin didn't specify who the other investors would be in such a deal or the potential valuation that he'd be willing to pay for the site. And there are other interested buyers, too. Wall Street Journal reported Sunday, in fact, that former Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick was shopping a potential deal to prospective partners. And just last week, Mnuchin's Liberty Strategic Capital was a lead investor in a $1 billion capital campaign to stabilize New York Community Bancorp. Well, another story here says many countries have bounced back from the COVID pandemic, but the poorest among us haven't. In fact, a significant numbers are seeing their conditions deteriorate, according to the UN's development program. Achim Steiner, who heads that agency, said after 2 decades during which rich people in poor countries were coming closer in terms of development, the latest finding is a very strong warning signal that nations are now drifting apart. The Human Development Index that the agency has produced since 1990 is projected to reach record highs as of the end of last year after steep declines during the pandemic years of 2020 and 21. But development in half the world's poorest countries remains below 2019 pre-pandemic levels. Higher is better in this index. The growing inequalities are compounded by the concentration of economic wealth. It pointed almost 40% of global trade in goods concentrated in 3 or fewer countries. And said the stock market value of the 3 largest tech companies in 2021, Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft, listen to this, surpassed the GDP of more than 90% of the 193 UN member nations that year. Wow. Steiner said the world's nations should be joining forces to focus on major threats in the 21st century, but instead, he warned, there's an increasing division and growing frustration and polarization among nations and its peoples. He said that populism in particular is increasingly dividing societies, radicalizing the political discourse, and essentially turning more and more people against each other. 90% of people polled worldwide endorsed democracy, but for the first time ever, over half the respondents in a global survey expressed support for leaders that actually risk undermining those foundations. Steiner said territorial conflicts will continue to crop up, but the threats to human security this century will more often require being able to collaborate with each other, particularly between rich and poor countries. He said there has to be a very careful look where inequality has become so extreme that he actually erodes political willingness to cooperate. Now, 10 countries with the lowest human development, Sierra Leone, Burkina Faso, Yemen, Burundi, Mali, Chad, Niger, all of them in Africa except Yemen. U.S. Tied with Luxembourg for 20th place of the highest development scores. Hey, music's here. We're heading into another break. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survivor, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. For all your precious metal needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. Former CNN anchor Don Lemon said yesterday that Elon Musk has canceled his new show on X, social media site formerly known as Twitter, after he, Lemon, interviewed the multi-billionaire entrepreneur last week. The split comes as ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino announced the platform is shifting to video first, and Musk has tried to broker deals with high-profile content creators. Lemon claims that Musk, a self-proclaimed free speech absolutist, was mad at him over the tense interview, which will be included in the premiere episode of The Don Lemon Show next week. Apparently, free speech absolutism doesn't apply when it comes to questions about him from people like me, Lemon said on a video on X. He added that questions were respectful and wide-ranging, covering everything from SpaceX to the presidential election. Lemon said he agreed to join X with the new show after Musk publicly encouraged him to do so. Lemon's spokesperson, Allison Gullis, said, "Don has a deal with X and expects to be paid for it. We have to go to court. We will." Well, X reportedly didn't have a signed contract with Lemon, although there was apparently a mutual understanding that such an agreement would soon be codified. Do I hear settlement, ladies and gentlemen? One of X's official accounts says that Lemon Show is welcome to publish its content on X without censorship. However, it continues, like any enterprise, we reserve the right to make decisions about our business partnerships, and after careful consideration X has decided not to enter into a commercial partnership with the Don Lemon Show. X didn't specify why it didn't partner with the show. Apparently, Musk doesn't like criticism, either direct or veiled. To me, it's sheer arrogance and hypocrisy. You know, ironic, just hours before Lemon announced that X dropped his show, Musk posted, "Free speech is the bedrock of democracy." Well, in one clip of the new show aired by CNN, Lemon asks Musk if he believes both he and X have a responsibility to moderate hate speech on the platform, alluding to comments Musk has made about Jewish people. Musk's response, "I don't have to answer from reporters. Don, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked me for it," adding that he could care less about being criticized. Well, since Musk purchased Twitter, the platform has been lenient to those who post hateful or extremist content while cracking down on other forms of speech. Musk personally reinstated the account of Alex Jones, the grumpy, disgraced conspiracy theorist who spread conspiracy theories about all the children killed during the Sandy Hook school shooting. Platform also suspended accounts belonging to white supremacist Nick Fuentes for anti-Semitic comments, only to reinstate and again ban the accounts later. Platform has also temporarily suspended the accounts of journalists who cover Musk and permanently suspended an account that used public information to track his private jet. Watchdog groups have also said X has repeatedly failed to remove posts, including extreme hate speech, that were in clear violation of its policies. Elon Musk preaching about the virtues of free speech run hollow with his ban of Lemon's new show. Come on, Elon, you can do better. A central question that's emerged since a cyber attack on a United Health Group subsidiary is how the strike against a single company has wrought such chaos across an entire industry. Hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies are all still struggling with the fallout of the outage of Change Healthcare's payment system, as they worry emergency measures won't be enough if the disruption drags on. Some cybersecurity experts point to United Health's buying spree, which, among other things, has allowed the nation's largest insurer to control a major piece of how medical claims are processed. Horizontal and vertical mergers that have become common among major U.S. companies, including healthcare, create massive targets for cyber criminals. That's according to Jason Hogg at Great Hill Partners, and who's a former FBI special agent. Others say there's too little oversight of the cyber security protecting such critical pieces of infrastructure. The situation, they say, is unimaginable in other sectors that depend on sensitive financial transactions. Imagine Jamie Dimon would already be on Capitol Hill if this had happened to JP Morgan Chase. That's Bo Hartman, co-founder of Nomi Health, who spent the majority of his career in the banking sector. Federal technical standards governing electronic data exchange may actually have made this attack more damaging. That's being argued by a nonprofit that supports tougher antitrust enforcement. These health department guidelines, known as Electronic Data Interchange Standards, EDIS, may have helped concentrate the use of Change Healthcare systems as a clearinghouse for payments by making it difficult for providers to use more than one clearinghouse at a time. That's the kind, that's kind of like making it difficult to use both Visa and MasterCard, according to Benjamin Jolly, who's a senior fellow with the group and a pharmacist directly affected by the recent outages. The pressure is mounting now on United Health, which has offered loans to affected providers. Biden administration officials have pushed UnitedHealth executives, including CEO Andrew Witte, to do more to stabilize providers during a meeting with healthcare groups. Well, new data are calling into question whether the economy will return to the pre-pandemic benchmark of 2% inflation anytime soon. The so-called last mile of the Fed's inflation fight was always going to be hard, but at least a few economists think that 3% could well become the new normal. February's consumer price figures show that inflation rose 3.2% in the 12 months it ended in February, showing how the road to 2% is getting increasingly bumpy and unpredictable. Inflation was able to decelerate from 9 to 3% rather quickly, according to Skylar Winand, who's the CIO of Dallas-based Regan Capital. But the path to the Fed's 2% target, he adds, may take more time than expected. Consumers are struggling with higher interest rates, making record credit card debt more expensive to carry, while mortgage rates north of 7% are putting homeownership aspirations out of reach for many, especially first-time buyers. Rodney Williams at Solo Fund says consumers want to grow capital and they don't want to spend on credit cards, but they don't have any choice. Credit cards are the most used solution for any kind of credit needed. That's a really interesting point. Once upon a time, he added, there was the person who didn't have a credit card. But that's no longer true. Everyone does. Even with interest rates that will likely remain higher for longer than most originally anticipated, the economy is still expanding. Higher wages combined with the booming stock market are giving consumers the incentive to open their wallets on just, well, about everything. And of course, that's to their detriment, given that strong demand is playing a key role in keeping prices elevated. Ms. Laura Rami at FS Investments thinks that we're living in a 3% world until further notice. With inflation durable and jobs plentiful, she's expecting the Fed to perform three or few surgical rate cuts this year. The Fed is going to err on the side of caution in terms of cutting too quickly. We will see what happens, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, before I go into this this last story, I'm just looking at breaking news here. It looks like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke impassionately from the Senate floor this afternoon to condemn Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and to call for elections to replace him. That's pretty amazing. That doesn't often happen, whether it's a U.S. president or a majority or minority leader of one of the houses of Congress. I'm not sure what impact it will have. It certainly creates a new wedge between our two countries. But that wedge had been growing anyway between President Biden and Netanyahu. Maybe it's news that some of Netanyahu's constituents and fellow Knesset members need to pay closer attention to. But I have a feeling he's going to reject these calls out of hand. Well, look, on Tuesday's program, I talked about how the Fed has a dual congressional mandate for monetary policy, maximum employment, sometimes referred to as full employment, and price stability. And I talked to meet its price stability objective, Fed policymakers target an average inflation rate of 2% over a medium period of time. But it has no specific target for its employment mandate. Why not? I don't know. But first, what is maximum or full employment anyway? Does it literally mean zero unemployment? Well, certainly not in the real world. Investopedia defines full employment as an economic situation in which all available labor resources are being used in the most efficient way possible. The Bureau of Labor Statistics defines it as the level of unemployment that exists in the economy with a steady, non-accelerating rate of inflation, concept known as NIRU. Still, another definition is the economic condition in which virtually everyone who's able and willing to work is employed. Now, while the actual number constituting full employment has varied over the years, a headline unemployment rate of 5% is often considered full employment. Many economists believe this level of employment, at least in the past, has been enough to minimize inflation and allow workers to move between jobs and where those wanting full-time work should be able to find it. The Fed's website is instructive. Quote, to assess the maximum employment level that can be sustained, the Federal Open Market Committee considers a broad range of labor market indicators, including how many workers are unemployed, underemployed, or discouraged and have stopped looking for a job. The FOMC does not specify a fixed goal for employment because the maximum level of employment is largely determined by non-monetary factors that affect the structure and dynamics of the labor market. However, Fed policymakers release their estimates of the unemployment rate that they expect will prevail once the economy has recovered from past shocks and if it is not hit by new ones. Unquote. In other words, simply adding another specific target that's focused on the job market, say the unemployment rate, isn't necessarily as easy as it sounds. For one thing, the Fed, like elected officials, most mainstream media, and mainstream economists, emphasize the Labor Department's U3 headline unemployment rate, which was 3.9% as of last month. But U3 notably excludes a big chunk of the potential labor market, like job seekers who are discouraged and those working part-time who'd like full-time work. U6 rate is 7.3%. Well, economist Preston Mui at Employment America said his group focuses more on measures like the prime age employment rate, wage growth, quit rates, or overall labor force participation. But he also believes that in some scenarios, the Fed doesn't pay it enough attention to that side of their mandate, and they should. I mean, we can be sure that the Fed isn't looking to revisit its 2% inflation target anytime soon, but perhaps in consultation with Congress and the White House, it should when its current tightening cycle is complete. Perhaps a bipartisan task force made up equally of economists of different ilks plus consumer and labor advocates should comprise any blue ribbon type committee when and if, I guess, the time comes. The Fed is here to stay. It's time to consider raising its inflation target and at the same time establishing a meaningful maximum employment target, even if it's in a range as well. There's just too much at stake to hang blindly with the status quo here. To paraphrase the great Will Rogers, you can be on the right track, but still get run over if you're standing still. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks as always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me.